That's why I ask.
Oh, so how are you isn't just one of the mundanities you just say automatically, unconsciously?
No, I'm weird, remember?
Oh, wow. You actually want to know how I am? I don't know how to answer that. I think I'm fine, fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional.
Well, at least you're clear. That's good.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm good. Our kids are in the middle of a week-long, they call it like junior lifeguard, where they go out and learn how to save people and run and do all this. And for a family that doesn't have a schedule, it's like a big deal together. Right. So it's funny to watch everybody interact with that. And
yeah.
Despite their complaining, they're actually still going. So we're on day 3 of 5. So everyone's growing.
So your kids are like every other kid. The kids just like to complain to see what it can get them.
Well, I'm sure it's hard. Like, it is a hard thing.
Yeah.
I don't think I would make it. I'm not friends enough with the water to tread water for 20 minutes or whatever. So,
you know, I'm a person who, when I get into, I like rhythms and disciplines and rituals and stuff, but I notice that so many of my rituals are right now. I'm running up a hill behind my house, and it's just like straight uphill for 5 minutes, and it nearly kills me.
Yeah,
but I do it anyway, and I just have like hatred and resistance to do it every day. And this morning I just got up and I said, what is it about me that likes to like create rituals around things that I don't like to do? But anyway,
I went to martial arts for 10 years. I didn't enjoy getting beaten in the face, but there was something nice about the routine.
Well, I think that, you know, for the base chakra, like for the root energy, rhythm is everything. And having schedules is not a bad thing if they can promote consciousness. I mean, for adults, it's you decide whether you're conscious or not. But for children, if you're going to have some schedule for them, you're hoping that it's going to help them gain awareness, gain understanding, rather than like, you know, repeat after me or whatever.
Well, yeah. I'm sure they would describe this week as a period of suffering, which I feel ties in well with what you suggested we talk about today.
Suffering? Yes. What did I suggest we talk about? Oh, I wanted to talk about living with things. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'll throw in my opening gambit. And by the way, I've had two suggestions this past week from people to have our kids, our children on our podcast.
Great.
So yeah, maybe that will happen. I mean, it's 11 here, 30 here in the morning in California, and my child, 23, is still asleep. So
I have kids like that too.
You do? Yeah. Well,
yes. Every other week, but this one, they would all be asleep.
Uh-huh. Yeah. They need a lot of sleep. Well, so my opening gambit is that, you know, actually last week I was saying to you, you know, maybe I wanted to talk about, well, I'll say that my definition of addiction, and I say my because I'm not sure that is either the dictionary or the clinical definition of it, but I think any time you secede the authority to soothe yourself, you secede that authority to something outside of yourself. And I want to say, you know, just getting a couple things here. You're always in choice. So when someone says, I don't have a choice, or you have an addiction, you don't have a choice. To me, it's choice. It's just not at a conscious level. So I think that when you secede the choice, when you give that choice over, I hope I'm using that word right, to something on the outside that you need to take care of on the inside, that's addiction. And so there may be degrees of things that we, you know, whether it's food or it's codependency or it's even spiritual practice, anything could be something that you are assigning the authority outside of yourself, and then you're giving it control over you. So I think what I was said to you last week, we didn't talk about in the podcast, is that addiction is really the attachment to preferences. It's wanting something different than the way something is. And when I hear people saying what they like and they don't like a lot, I'm tangent mania here in Elijahville. Over at the restaurant where I'm playing piano 4 nights a week, sometimes 5, when I'm inside, I'm in the bar area, which is not that big. And like, there's all these people there. I just can listen to everybody's conversation. And it's just incredible to just listen to people talking about preferences. Like, that's all anybody's talking about when they're socializing. All right. So get to the thing about living with things. I went through something really difficult this week in terms of something I had to live with with actually one of my kids, and I did not have a inner guidance to communicate, to do anything about it. I mean, it was just really hard. I was suffering. It hurt, and it hurt in my heart, and you know, it was relational things. And I think when relational things happen out in the world, certainly the older you get, like you can just accept who people are and move on, and you don't suffer too much. But if somebody's, you've been with them their whole life, and you're close to them and you love them like so much, and you have intimacy with them, and there's a problem and you can't do anything about it, and can't really, in my case, can't really say anything because, it wasn't for me to say. I had a really, really difficult week emotionally, which is rare. I mean, rare now anyway. And I see that the hardest thing is to be the author of your life is to be able to withstand not what's on the outside, but what's on the inside. And I think that when you do that, you gain an incredible amount of strength, because the adversity of it shows you, you know, what you, it shows you so much about what you can do and who you are and how you can be with things. The world is a difficult place outside because people are different than us, and like getting along, and like some people don't care about the rules or whatever, they don't care about empathizing or helping out. Like, you can't just go through the world and assume everything's going to be easy. You have to be able to live with things. And I think that we have a culture that supports people to continually try to find comfort through whatever pill you're going to take, whatever drug you're going to take, whatever drink you're going to have, whatever food you have, whatever kind of partner you're looking for, on what kind of job you, whatever it is you think. And we're never really told, except in sort of a suck it up sort of way, to learn how to live with something, not as a passivity like you're a victim, but as an active participant in accepting that you had something to do with its creation, that its presence in your life is there, and often for reasons you don't know about. And last thing I'll say about it, you know, is the thing that I felt hurt, just being very general about, something with my daughter, and like, but the reality is it wasn't, and this isn't always the case. It's never, this is the only time my whole life I've ever been hurt in this way. And that's always, I think, a first door that hard to accept, you know, that I heard there was this thing called the Course in Miracles. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but
yeah.
My ex was in there, and like the one thing that stood out with the Course in Miracles was you're never angry for the reason you think. And I think it's true that whatever emotion you have that is uncomfortable, you know, feels like an upset, a disruption, an inflammation, whatever it is inside you, it always has tentacles into other things that are deeper in your unconscious that you don't know about. And you might, and yes, maybe somebody did mistreat you, but it's not the beginning. It's not the first thing that ever happened. And I think to me that that's the start of a not communicating, so that you relate to your part in it before you start talking to someone else about what they did or whatever you thought they did. And learning that, like, that taking care of this is living with it is taking care of it. Like, not going to comfort yourself to ease it. And I have done this my whole life, like, because it was not easy to take drugs and things because I was really sensitive. Like, I couldn't do the escape hatches that people I knew around me were doing, well, drugs and alcohol and food, because I had a sensitive body that I like, it made anything worse for me. So I've always had a sort of an ability to live in some level of abstinence or renunciation. I mean, I've also, I would say that's not even 100% true, but just to finally say that I feel now that when I'm able to just really, like, embrace the difficulty, not by saying I like it or I want it, but just to allow it to be there, it's always hugely transformative. And so I feel that the point I wanted to make about our podcast about being the authority in the mirror, I think the biggest thing is, if you really want to be the author of your life, you can't be running from the way you feel about things. So thanks for
letting me say all that. I think we're talking about, like, the meaning of, or the thing that we have to do in life is to learn how to be with it.
Yeah.
And I feel like I got lucky with all these kids hanging around. I got to witness, because they were all, except for the first one, born at home, but I was at all of their births, in increasing amounts of presence as I got older. But when you witness that, when you witness a woman do that, that is an example of being with what is not common in everyday life. And when you see it so many times and you get to see what your response to it is.
What's the it that you're speaking of?
Because the birth of a child, you were talking about watching a woman do that.
It's funny because I thought you were going to say what the child goes through.
No, I'm talking about the woman.
Okay, because the child is to be born too, and that, like,
that's right. I don't have any conscious access to what that must be like, but I can see what's going on in the woman, and I can see what watching that does inside of me. And at the beginning, it's just fear, and then you learn. I mean, I was used to living with fear because that was my whole life, so not a new feeling. But as the kids kept coming, the separation between that and me started to appear. That thing that I used to try to push away, or ignore or pretend wasn't there, I developed the capacity to have it around without fighting for it to go away. Mm-hmm. And watching a child be born and what has to happen for that, is a huge help in that, because you're witnessing a beingness that is, by sheer physiology, I mean, they can still resist in their brain, must be accepted.
Yeah.
It's like a total extreme in a man's life. I don't know, like, martial arts could be that, but that lasts for like 2 seconds. So I would be slapped if I said that out loud. It's just not the same. And to see that over and over again. And then I mentioned Michael Brown, the author of The Presence Process, in one of our past episodes, but he had a very simple phrase that he always repeated in that book: if it is happening, it's required. And if you allow that to sink in, the resistance to what is can start to melt. And then you can get about like developing this capacity, not only to be with what is, but to have a different relationship with what is. Actually view it as a welcomed message, opportunity to grow, whatever story you want to make. And it's a huge and powerful journey. But you have to open the door that, I kept it closed 25, 30 years to what is. And that really seems to be the secret of life, is learning to be with it.
You had two questions. One is, can you describe the difference between your first child and your 10th child in terms of what you went through? And then also, like, you know, Maren is a, you know, midwife and like, and is technically an expert in birthing children, having 10 of them herself, but like the lengths of the births and the challenges of them, like, could you just speak a little bit about, you know, some of those some of the things that she might have gone through?
Yeah. To say that I was asleep for the first one, not actually, but metaphorically, would have been an understatement. We were in the hospital. I watched the world happen to her and me. I was tired at the end, so I went home. I actually said, I'll be back tomorrow. I'm really tired.
Yeah.
So that's where we started.
Yeah.
And along maybe five kids in, yes, she did study to be a midwife, practiced for a long time. I believe that made it worse as she became more experienced, actually, made it harder to go to that place where you don't know all of the things. What I learned was that in a situation like that, the male propensity to want to fix things because we can't deal with the abyss of what is and could be.
Well, it's what I was saying at the beginning.
Yeah. I realized that was not helpful early on, right? Because you get slapped and pushed away. Like, don't do that. But as the kids kept coming and I grew up, I realized that on an energetic level, I had to have my shit together or it really messed with things. And having your shit together means you have zero attachment to anything but what is happening. And that's hard when you're staring at someone that you love going through this process that really is a razor thin difference between life and death. Like, you're right on the edge for so many reasons. And so you're staring into the face of God, basically, and you have to keep your stuff together. And I have a unique position because I've heard the stories of the guys who can't do that. I was one of them, and it made it easier for me to see than I otherwise probably would have had it, because all of that stuff just gets projected in such a bizarre way during moments like that. And in terms of Maren's experience, while I think it was harder for her head not to be involved as she went, I noticed her, the type of active surrender, the increase from over the years was pretty spectacular.
Yeah. There was an acceptance on another level.
Like, do you know when, I can't think of another situation really. I mean, I haven't had enough experiences, I don't think, at the edges, but those experiences in life that are so profound and actually fast that it feels like it's still, like time has stopped. You actually inhabit like more fully the moment, I think, than probably any other time. That was an opportunity for me to practice that and to understand what that felt like. Because if you can take that back to a Wednesday, like, that's a transformative perspective.
I think it's maybe I'm just going a little sideways, but I think one of the difficulties with, because we both help people with their processes in various ways, you more in business and me more like in their person specific, like directly to the spiritual development. But it's hard to, until you have the experience that there's a value to going through these things, it's hard to not sell that to somebody, but it's hard to explain to somebody what it feels like to sort of gain the courage or the strength to be more embracing of things.
There's anything in our society that would teach people that, because that's where power is. Like, if you can do that, you're uncontrollable.
Yeah. Well, I think this is what, you know, to be your own authority is to be emancipated from need, but not from a point of view of like you're a monk who's like, okay, I'm going to have sex and I don't need money and what, but be emancipated from, well, Buddha said all desire is suffering. And I think what he means is meant hunger and desperation. And so it's not that you shouldn't want things, but if you feel that what you need is separate from you, you're immediately suffering. And so if the state that you're in isn't acceptable to you, you're in resistance.
And you've gifted not the your authority. Power to something or someone.
Yeah. Yes, you have lost your authority. Yeah.
Yeah, I learned that there are two things that I have to do at every moment at the same time. And they're way harder than like patting your head and rubbing your stomach. Mm-hmm. They're to have the clearest of intentions about where you're leading yourself, mm-hmm. along with a complete and radical acceptance of what is. And if I can get both of those things to happen at once, there's like joy in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to say my birthing experience is sort of the opposite of yours. I had two children 10 years apart, but the first one we had with a midwife at home. We had a water birth and everything, and I was woo-woo before there was a woo-woo. Both were. And it was this, and then I married a gynecologist's daughter who was chief of medicine at the hospital, started birthing centers, Sicilian, and every procedure known to man took place in the hospital on that second birth, and every intervention. And I was, you know, we were so relaxed in the first one, and my daughter's mother had done a ton of breath work a month before, and she had a 2-hour labor. But then the second one, I was 40. I was exhausted. She was upset. We were in the hospital alone and she had had all this intervention, and I was, falling asleep on the couch, and she was like screaming at me, "You're going to be my hero, aren't you?" And I'm like, "I just want to take a nap. Like, I'm so tired right now." And And then finally, when they realized they needed to birth her, all the family came. So there were 6 children. So there was kids and grandchildren and cameras. The doctor, her father, who wasn't allowed to birth the baby but wanted to, like coaching from the side. And it was like being at a football game with drugs. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that the capacity to hold life is like the thing we work on.
Not do you mean your life or also,
I mean, what's happening?
Yeah,
whatever's happening, can you hold it? Do you have the capacity to just breathe it in and be with it?
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason why I wanted to bring this up today was that, you know, I could feel very strongly that I needed to be still and silent, because I know the difference. You know, I'm a manifestor in human design. I'm here to initiate. So I'm an initiator. I'm always the one who starts, but I've learned now that not every initiatory impulse is coming from my higher self. And when I get the message not to do anything, it takes so much effort for me to be still. And what I'm always finding in that stillness is a kind of a violence inside, because it's something, even though I have peace in so many ways. If I've been triggered, I'm touching something I don't know about. And the thing I'm touching is always the violence of the souls living, having lived outside of alignment or having suffered various things and not having worked them through. And I could feel all week that, because I was really tired, you know, I was moving through things, but inside I could feel myself just, what's the word? I don't want to say processing, because it makes it sound more mental or linear, but it's like if you hold something, you allow it to breathe. You allow it to move. You allow the energy to move, because this stuff that comes up for whatever reason has brought it up is already in you. It's just being brought up. And the reason why it's still in you is because you didn't live with it the first time or the second time or the 100th time. So the ability to like sit in that and feel the violence of disorganization or the out of orderness of what you're feeling, a trauma, whatever it is, allows that energy to change, but to caution and say, not instantaneously. Like I should say, I had a conversation with my daughter yesterday. It was a really big conversation. It was really beautiful and difficult and worthy, but had it happened a week ago, it wouldn't have happened like that. That week of going through that led to the conversation I had. But during the course of the week, it evolved and changed, and I witnessed it, and I held it like the difference between having Maren having her first kid and having her sixth kid. But I think that I caution people in general, because there are so many beautiful practices and methods and things you can do to help yourself. But the real work isn't about an expectation around timing, and to know that things, the important things in life, don't change quickly. You can change quickly. You can wake up. But the energy that's moving lives in time and space in a way and needs the time that it takes to move through. And to me, there's a subtle difference between, from now on after this podcast, people are going to go, well, I'm going to just hold something. But then in the back of your mind is like, because what I'm going to get out of it is I'm going to stop suffering. And it's not really the point, because part of it is you have to let it happen in its own timing, because it has its own energy and momentum and purpose. And I feel like that's another part of the holding is not having an expectation about where it's leading you or how and when it should change you.
Yeah, the process can be the payoff. It's kind of like an energetic workout that if you don't resist but embrace, that doesn't mean you have to welcome it, but like be with it, then your resilience increases. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon you look back and 10 years have gone by and quote unquote things happen that don't get to your center.
Right. Yeah, and there's the changes that happen over time that you're saying, which are like that you're no longer in a reactivity inside. Something has changed all by itself. But then I think the part that I'm, the place that I was in this past week is that I really have given an invitation in my prayers to bring me in contact with anything that's in the way between me and whatever I'm here for. And so I find often things that happen, it's not necessarily that they they don't get to my center. I feel like that's one goal. But the other is also really like allowing the things that still really do get to my center and saying, you know, I want to trust. And one of the big things that happened for me this week was that I wanted to strategize when I was going to have the conversation and what I was going to say and what it was going to be about. And I could just see that this was part of the game. This was part of the pattern I needed to let go of, which was, you know, when I was younger, if I was afraid, I froze up and I couldn't speak about things. I was really mute as a kid. Like I didn't say stuff. I got in trouble when I said things. So I have this part of me that if I feel there's upset in the space, particularly if other people are upset with me, I'll forget what's important to me and what to say. And I was worried that I wasn't going to have the words. So in that process during the week, there was a part of a patterning, a false self inside me that was saying, here's what you should do. Here's what you should say. Write this down or whatever. And I didn't do any of that because I wanted to accept that my center was gotten by something inside, triggered by something outside. And that which was touched needed to be fully revealed in order to change. And not doing anything about it was the hardest thing in the world. But living with it transformed me. And when I actually ended up in conversation, the things that I ended up saying were so different than I imagined. I mean, it didn't even go the way I expected at all.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That reminds me that, you know, the Matrix it seems to point to the idea that there is a way.
Yeah.
And what you just described, like 80% of that I can't relate to because that's not how energy moves through my body, because it's not my way. Like we're just here right. to do our way.
You know, when we used to have a call once a week, you were helping Sarah and I with Effigy with our business. And, you know, there were so many ways that you spoke. I was like, I don't agree with that or whatever. Like because you do have your own way of doing things. There's a wisdom in it.
We all do. I mean, yeah, that's the journey we're on, right? We're sharpening our own version of self.
And I think the thing you're just not disagreeing with me about you're saying the way it moves through me, can you just say what the difference is between us? How does it move through you?
Sure. Maybe like if you look at my human design body graph, my emotional center is undefined, open. I'm not very emotional. If someone dies in the family, like I don't feel anything, which is a really weird way to be. And so when you talk about all these deep feelings and like, I don't know what I feel most of the time. It's a very different interaction with the outside world. And what I've come to do for me, you know, you said you had a strategy to do this and even it didn't play out the way that you originally planned. And that was good. Like I just say, universe, come and get me if you want it. Like I have learned that for me, that active role doesn't get me where I need to go because I'm my own worst enemy.
Well, I might disagree with you on some of these things because I think that you have deep heart and deep feeling, but I have undefined center as well. And manifestors are not emotional beings. We're not supposed to be emotional. And when we do have feelings, they usually belong to other people.
Do you know what you feel in the moment?
Yeah. And I think that is always someone, even maybe it was Sarah, commented to me that they always just thought it was so weird that I always knew how I felt. But the thing is, I don't think I feel much either in a way. And in a normal world, like I'm not reacting in any, and I think we're the same. I have undefined centers also in human design. And but when I do feel things, it goes to the deepest place. I have no control over that. And maybe that part of us is different. Like I've had, you know, yes, I do feel a lot, but in general, like I mean, I spend a lot of my life, I have spent a lot of my life alone, whether I wanted to or not. And now I do that consciously and somewhat of a hermit, and I can just be just doing stuff. I don't need people, like not in a normal way. And I don't feel things in a normal way, but I do feel them. And I would just wonder if that's really true, that you don't feel anything.
I don't know. It could be yet to be discovered. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe you're talking about a kind of a classic way somebody thinks about an emotion, like you get sad or something, like doesn't happen.
Yeah. I feel like it's a very weird response. Like if someone said that about someone, my first response would be, oh my goodness, they're free.
If somebody murdered your child in front of you, you're saying
I would be sad. Anything. I would be sad. So Thank certainly you. there is an
prosecution in, rests.
There is an internal circle there where things are different.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that it's cool that we can rejoice in the fact that we share certain things, like a reason that we're here. We have energetics and the way they work in our physical form. Yeah. We have all the past lives that we've inhabited. Apart from that, we're kind of all on our own, sorting out the way to do it. And to say, yeah. I mean, agree and disagree, you're right. It doesn't even really fit in. It's like saying, I don't agree with red. Like it's not even the right word pair for what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause we're all in our own thing.
Yeah. So you weren't speaking to me. You're just talking about everybody.
Yeah. We have things that we share.
Yeah.
But the way we're moving through the world, there's a lot of variation. And to think, and I started this by saying the Matrix kind of implies that there is a way.
Yeah.
Which turns out really to be not helpful. In my experience,
I think when you say the Matrix in that way, I feel like there are many matrices, because, you know, countries are matrices, religions are matrices.
Well, in this states, one, I would cities. Say I'm talking about matrices that are structured based on others' preferences, which is what you mentioned a while ago.
Yeah. And what I was getting at is that there are many, many matrices. So there are many ways people think you should do things. And like, if you go to different places or different, you find out that it's not the same matrix for everybody.
That's right.
What, like, so when you're saying, you know, the Matrix tells you, like, different matrices tell you different things.
That's my word for the way most people think it should go.
Yeah. I think when you talk about autonomy, you're just saying, to be completely free of any external conditioning.
Yeah, which I'm probably like only 10% of the way there. I can't imagine what kind of a trip that must be to get way down that road. It must feel amazing.
You know, I've never had a job. I've never worked for anybody. I've never had a doctor. Like I have a bunch of those things. And there is a part of me that knows what it feels like, because I think that, you know, even my oldest bestie, Doug, told me, we were having a conversation one day recently, and he said, you know, when I had a child, it completely changed my life. And he said, when you had children, I don't think it changed you at all. And he wasn't insulting me, but I've always kind of had a certain part of me that was never part of anything. So I never really, and I think we're different. We both have dealt with conditioning, but the way you describe it, you were fully in it and playing the game and trying to win it.
I was knowing. In it to win it.
Yeah. And I was never in it. Maybe what I was trying to do was to be in it, to see if I could like have somebody say, hey, you come join the team, come join the Matrix. And that never happened.
I always joke with my wife, because she went to a Catholic girls' school, and she always says, like, I knew this was BS when I was like 5 years old.
Yeah.
And I just laughed, because it was like 20 years yet before I thought to myself, there's something not right here.
Well, that's another thing. There's a, like, everybody's timing for their own process is so different. And that's, you know, one reason why I wasn't wanting to have the conversation I ended up having with my daughter was because I want her to live the life that she wants to live. And I know that I'm influential if I open my mouth. And I didn't really want to be talking about my perception of her because I don't want to her to have to live with that because I'm not here to tell her how to live. At the same time, I was unhappy with certain ways that she had treated me recently. So I did have to say something. But suffice to say, I'm always aware, particularly now, that everybody has a different point of awakening to different things. And you can be 5 years old and know something is BS, or you can be 65 years old. It doesn't really matter when it happens. I mean, God's patient, right? So you can have as many lifetimes as you want to do this, but I don't pigeonhole people to think that they should be at any one specific awareness at any one point in their life. I think it's completely unique to every individual.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's developmental things, but what?
One thing I have found going back to the purpose of this whole hour here is that my life is better if I just stop arguing with what's actually happening.
Yeah. Well, maybe, first of all, I didn't know we were doing an hour. I thought we were doing a half hour. And secondly, maybe you need to give up looking at the clock and not knowing about time. Maybe time is part
and
of
fully immerse myself
living
in
the matrix.
Yes, that could be.
Somebody gave you a clock and now you believe there's time. It's a good one to end on. Yeah. I mean, it's time. Time might be the ultimate conditioning, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, any closing thoughts?
No, I mean, this all comes back to the same thing every episode. You have your own answers. You have your own path. You have your own authority. Don't forget any of those things.
And if you do, that's okay too.
Tune in next week. We'll try again.
I have a little poem because when you were talking about Marin and pregnancy, and I thought, oh, this is one of my favorite poems. And it's not a Rumi poem. Rumi had a son, Sultan Vlad, who was a poet. Probably didn't know that, did you?
Nope.
Fun facts. Jamming that, just put more information right. But it's called Sufferings Are Wings. Man who does not know mystical suffering is not really alive. He's like ice. Suffering in the soul is a sign of life. It shows submission to God. The body lives by the soul. The soul lives by this holy suffering. He who is deprived of it cannot be called a human being. A pregnant woman never gives birth without pain. An army never conquers without difficulties. Union without suffering is impossible. A cold heart never comes anywhere near it. Sufferings are wings for the bird of the soul. A bird without wings cannot take flight. So weep and groan and lament, my friend, so you can free yourself from this prison and fly to that placeless place where you will be free forever in the boundless sky of God.
That's pretty cool. I have nothing to say after the Sultan. We'll just stop there.
Yeah. Okay.
See you next time.
Got me working, boss man, working round the clock. I want me a drink of water, but you won't let Elijah stop. Big boss man, can you hear me when I call? Well, you ain't so big, you're just tall, that's all. Treat me right. all, that's all.